Hello, and welcome to the Sky U podcast by the Daily Gopher. I'm Chris, Go A U Fur. With me this week is Andy, Gopher Guy 05.
I'd just like to say that I have withdrawn from the transfer portal and have decided to stay here for at least another semester, so you're welcome.
And U Street.
Hey, y'all.
Andy, you aren't going to the NHL?
No, I'm much more of an ECHL. You know, I'm one of those, you know, I want to play in Cincinnati and just show up on dollar beer night and have the guys toss me a couple of beers while I'm on the ice. That'd be fun, right?
That's basically what happens, yes. That and large towers, many, many, many towers of beer cans. Speaking of what could have been a towering win, the Gophers almost pulled off a big road upset against Michigan State tonight. That game has just wrapped. The Gophers lose by 2. And, you know, I'm frankly quite impressed. Obviously, I'm not going to sit here and talk about moral victories because whatever. But this is a game an undermanned Minnesota team should lose. And frankly, should lose by more than 2. And yet here we are playing another Big Ten ranked number 10 Michigan State ranked team tough. And Alex, I'm just interested in understanding what you think is going on here.
Obviously, as we all predicted, Minnesota had 12 offensive rebounds to Michigan State 6. The other thing, though, looking at this game, the story of the game really does look, you know, just a 2-point victory. Both Minnesota and Michigan made the exact same number of field goals. They made the exact same number of threes. Michigan State has 2 more made free throws. That's the game difference. They overshot 64% from the free throw line, which unfortunately is not going to get it done, especially on the road. But certainly early in this game, Michigan State opened up a reasonably decent lead. You know, they had a double-digit point lead at one point. They more or less, as you said, are a better team. Top to bottom, Michigan State is a better team right now than Minnesota. And I think, as I said in the last recap after Minnesota's last loss, that there's going to be an expectation pretty regularly during this Big Ten season that we're going to see the same pattern. And the pattern fundamentally is Minnesota does not have the horses to play against, well, frankly, the Big Ten mid and above, but definitely not the elite like Michigan State. So that's one. And so that's why I'm not surprised that they lost this game. But the second thing, which we have now seen in most games this season, but especially in these road games, obviously the road win against Michigan, and now here this road loss against Michigan State, Minnesota might have themselves a good one in Ben Johnson.
I mean, he certainly seems to be, you know, calling great out of bounds plays, putting the guys in a position to do well. It's really quite nice to see.
He's been, and again, I've also said the same thing that I expected would happen from non-conference to conference season, which is that you let a lot of really smart people take a deep look at Minnesota for a while, and you're going to expose a lot of flaws. But man, Ben Johnson is calling heck of a game. And admittedly, Ben Johnson is also not actually playing the game. The players are doing a really good job on that front. EJ Stevens tonight had himself a ball game. He came out, balled out, finished with 18 on the night, had a really solid efficiency rating, was only thing couldn't do was unfortunately make some threes tonight, but otherwise second leading scorer on the team. Eric Curry, who unfortunately, it's still early, we're recording this immediately after the game, so there isn't any long-term prognosis. Eric Curry late in the game fell and was clutching a lower body injury. It does not seem great off the get, and obviously if Eric Curry is out for any extended action, my prognosis on whether or not Minnesota will win another game for a while goes down. But Curry had 19 tonight, was playing a fantastic game in 30 minutes. Peyton Willis played the full game, more or less. Jameson Battle played almost the full game, more or less. So we saw a very, very small rotation tonight. There is talent on this team. It's not quite to the same level as Michigan State, but the reason why this is a 2-point game is, frankly, their game planning is working. They have veteran players who are making shots at times they need to, making great defensive plays when they need to. Peyton Willis, for example, had 3 steals tonight. It's a fantastic defensive performance on him for him. And Ben Johnson is calling a lot of really good plays that get them in positions to make shots. Now, of course, eventually the players have to execute and make shots. You can be the greatest coach in the world if your players are raining threes no matter what. But I have been very happy for this season, even with my very low expectations, that isn't something that was, oh, we saw it in the first five or six games, and then people would start getting a scout on the Gophers, and then the sideline out of bounds plays, the after timeout plays, baseline out of bounds plays, those shots would kind of dry up. That hasn't happened so far this year. I haven't done a deep dive into the specific play-by-play stats, but my very 30,000 bird's eye view suggests that Minnesota is shooting a fairly ridiculous efficiency rating on sideline out of bounds, after timeout plays, and baseline out of bounds, which is the most in-game thing that a coach can do in terms of drawing up a play. And so regularly there's a bag of tricks that Ben Johnson and his staff are pulling out, which is great to see.
Just to break in with good news, or as good as it can get, apparently Ben Johnson in his post-game media said Eric Curry day-to-day with an ankle injury. So that would assume that it was a fairly normal, minor sprained ankle or something like that, and he should be back relatively quickly.
That is definitely good, in particular because it has nothing related to his knee, which would be
damn straight.
Would be the thing that would be far more worrisome for any long-term prognosis. But even so, I mean, there is a clear difference between Eric Curry and Charlie Daniels, who I like and has been giving solid backup minutes, but is not Eric Curry's level and is not going to be a regular contributor. So if any of Minnesota's starting five is out for any extended period of time, the Gophers simply are too thin. This goes back to what we expected at the beginning of this season, that with the roster turnover, Minnesota just is not deep enough, and unfortunately right now is not yet talented enough to compete at the upper echelons of the Big Ten in terms of winning games. But what we are also seeing consistently, and I think Michigan State presents a bit of a better matchup for Minnesota. Michigan State doesn't have a Kofi Cockburn kind of player who can just maul you out of the way, and so Minnesota's lack of size in the front court isn't exposed quite the same way as when playing Michigan State. But if Minnesota isn't just out-muscled, they can hang with lots and lots of teams, and again, be annoying.
The mantra of this season, be annoying. All right, well, I mean, it's kind of, do you have, I guess, without knowing for sure what Eric Curry is going to do, it's hard to make prognosis and guess about the future. So I think we move on to the women. The women went to Madison, got a win, which is what you're supposed to do in Madison when you're playing the Badgers. The Badger women's team is not good, I think, is the technical term. Extremely bad. I'm sorry. I was off with my technical term. Andy, can you give us a quick recap of the win over the extremely bad Badgers?
Yeah, the Gophers got a 82-66 win in Madison. Now Lindsey Whalen 4-0 all time against the Badgers in Madison. Yeah, and it was a really well-rounded game. Kati Sissoko led the Gophers with 16 points, but Deja Winters, Scariscalia both had 14. Jasmine Paul had 9. Rose Michaud ended up with 8. Gadiva Hubbard with 9. So they really spread the scoring around, which is nice. But, I mean, this team is a middling team. I mean, they're going to have to go on a run here if they're going to make anything really happen. By the way, nice to see Lindsey Whalen back on the bench tonight after missing the last two games after having an emergency appendectomy last week, which nobody ever wants to go through, but it sounds like she came through fine and just missed two games. That'd be a win at Rutgers and then a loss at home against number 10 Maryland last Sunday, which, I mean, Maryland is good, and the Gophers are, like we said, a middling team. With the win tonight, they moved to 9-8 overall, 2-3 in the Big Ten. And they're in the middle of the pack. I mean, they're gonna have to do some things, and unfortunately for them, their schedule is not real easy the next couple of weeks. They get Ohio State at home Saturday evening, 5 p.m. tip from the barn, and then their next game is hosting, I think, number 3 in the country right now, Iowa. They're top 5 for sure. Sophomore Caitlin Clark is the best player in the country, not named.
Well, in terms of not injured.
The best player in the country currently not injured. You're right. Good luck to those games. At two in a row at home. But, this team, you'd like to see in year 4 of the Whalen era that they're doing things a little bit more accomplished, but they're still sort of where they are. They're a middle of the pack team. All four of their recruits were named Midwest nominees for the McDonald's All-American game today. So there's a positive. They definitely have some reinforcements coming in, but the Gophers have got to do things in the Big Ten here. 2-3 through 5 games. You still got 13 conference games left before the conference tournament, and I think this team needs to finish probably at least, I'd say 9-9 in the conference. Anything less than that's going to be a little disappointing, but they still have plenty of time to work that out.
Well, working things out, football, this is the time of the year when I would normally expect football to calm just a little bit, but then I forget the transfer portal. Transfer portal is a thing. So we've got transfer portal news. We've got the Big Ten changes up everybody's schedule news. We've got coaches, because I'm realizing, just checking back, we've had a lot of coaching turnover since the last Sky U podcast last week, literally just a week ago. So let's get through it. In the transfer portal, we've got two Power 5 transfers. Darnell Jeffries, defensive tackle from Clemson, transferring to Minnesota. And just announced tonight, Michigan offensive guard, offensive lineman Chuck Feligia, I'm going to go with Feligia, who has started 35-ish games at Michigan, transferring from Michigan to the Gophers. I am actually pretty pleased with both these picks. Neither of them are, we're not picking up guys who were the most dominant player on their line, but when you're picking up a Power 5 guy to come in and at the very least provide depth, and in the case of Chuck Feligia, probably, compete for a starting spot for sure. I think that's a pretty good use of the portal.
Yeah, no, definitely, for sure. I mean, Jeffries definitely is a position of need. Obviously, Minnesota lost a whole bunch of their defensive line depth after the season. And so he'll come in and definitely play in the rotation with some of the younger guys at D-tackle. Whether he'll be the Niles Pickney level or something a little less, only time will tell. But just having another good veteran, somebody who's been there with a great team in the locker room, can't help. But yeah, the Feligia, that one sort of came out of thin air. I mean, we admittedly aren't the recruiting experts, but I don't think anybody heard any whispers about this one until it was announced tonight. You take away a couple of big boys and you add a big boy, 6'6", 340. As you said, he's played in 39 career games for Michigan. He's only started, I think, 12. But still.
Sorry, yeah, if I said started, apologies there. That's way off.
But still, you add him, and now you add Quinn Carroll, and it's like all of a sudden, we were talking about this offensive line has questions, admittedly, because everything's got to mesh together and things like that. But all of a sudden, you're adding a lot of quality big boys and that have, decent years of experience and things like that. And it's like, okay, we can, we can start putting things together, and this offense might not take as big of a step back as we potentially thought. So, I definitely like these last couple of guys, and I think, amazingly, PJ Fleck and company are still trying to still fill some holes. I know they're still potentially looking at another defensive lineman, and they're still looking at some other spots where they can bring people in. So, I still don't think this will be the last time we get to use the sweet transfer portal graphic on the website.
I was going to say, we have the sweet graphic now, PJ. You got to really keep bringing it home for us.
But yeah, only time will tell. And you know, at least we're, you know, I guess, you know, obviously we said the transfer portal giveth and the transfer portal taketh away. We've gone over, you know, a lot of the players who have left Minnesota. Kai Thomas being the only one, I think, left who hasn't really decided where he's going to end up. The two Gopher backup quarterbacks announced earlier this week, Jacob Clark is headed to Missouri State and Zach Anastad to Illinois State. So those two will face one another in the Missouri Valley, and we can obviously root for them as much as we can whenever they both have to face North Dakota State. and then it was announced Curtis Dunlap has finally made a decision, and he's headed to Rutgers. So the incestuous relationship between the PJ Flex staff and the Greg Schiano staff continues yet again.
You know, Street, I've been trying to mull over where I think Minnesota falls in this transfer portal world. And it seems to me, on balance, that, you know, separate from who you lose, which is a product of so many other factors, but when looking at players to bring in, it feels like a program at Minnesota's level is kind of in a position to really kind of get the best of all worlds. You're still prominent enough to have quality, lower-level FCS talent want to hop up to you, but you're also still you're below you know, the Alabamas, the Michigans, the Ohio States, the Clemsons of the world, but not so far below that players who want to leave those programs when they are no longer able to stockpile blue chips can end up in your on your roster. You know, I feel like, you know, 2 years in, it's not like PJ's, you know, kind of gotten quite the Mel Tucker experience, but still a pretty solid 2 years of work in the portal right now.
I think it's always important that we go to me to have conversations about recruiting. Yes, I would agree with that. I would agree with all of that. I think, too, beyond that first point is PJ Fleck has done another thing that has been useful for the transfer portal, which is the players who have come in via the transfer portal have not only been put into the lineup, but they have also gone pro. And that is nothing to sneeze at. Of course, Williamson, for example, there's a reasonably good chance, I think, that Jack Givens will see some at least a cup of coffee somewhere, maybe on a practice squad, not necessarily being drafted. So that also gives people who are thinking, what's my 1 year rental or maybe 2 year rental? I want to move up to another level of competition. I'm going to start here. And I suspect that is something that has been useful. I would also hope to some degree that when thinking about the portal, I would imagine that what you're looking for predominantly is not to fill via the portal in football. I think basketball might be a little bit of a different story in that because of the movement of players in basketball, because of the short timeline of really top players, you know, grabbing someone from the transfer market, Eric Musselman, Chris Beard, etc., that can be a very successful path to win. I don't know if that's true in football. I don't think that you can really make your bones just trying to hit in the transfer portal over and over again. But what I think you can do in football is really pick your spots as to what you want to fill with the transfer portal. And one of the things that PJ Fleck and his staff are unquestionably good at is identifying that talent. They don't always win the recruiting battles, but they're good at identifying it. So the same kind of pitch, all of the complaints that sort of go to PJ, you know, his fast clocks, making people decide, all this other stuff, putting pressure, etc. I think in the transfer portal, when you only have that compressed period of time to sign people, really also plays into Minnesota's hands. So I think they're a good landing spot. The program is in a position right now where you should expect to be competing for a division championship every year. So you're not going to, like, I don't know, Troy or North Alabama. You're going to a place where if things really hit like they should, you're playing in a New Year's Day bowl game. Maybe you have an outside shot at some postseason play that actually matters. Those things are all really positive, and that's something good for the program going forward. Ultimately, the best thing for Minnesota is to keep hitting and the sort of pick and choose transfers, as opposed to, well, let's get like 8 or 10 guys. I would also like to point out that I don't really think Minnesota's lost very much in the transfer portal. And that, I think, is as important as what they're bringing in.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, Kai Thomas is probably the most impactful loss. And even there, they could definitely be fine. They may not be, but they're not looking at a sudden immediate deficit, an automatic gap. There should be enough talent returning and that potentially, you know, that can be filled. So, yeah, I'd agree with all that. Well, I guess if we want to talk coaching transfer portal, quote unquote, let's just recap what happened since the last time we were talking on the pod. Rutgers hired Joe Harismaic as their defensive coordinator. Clay Patterson, tight end coach, headed over to Colorado to pick up the role as passing game coordinator, and I believe still tight end coach for them, moving along with Mike Sanford Jr., who is now the offensive coordinator at Colorado. And Indiana hired Chad Wilt, defensive line coach, away to be their defensive coordinator and linebackers coach. So those are three, you know, fairly impactful losses. All three of those coaches were definitely proven with some recruiting acumen. And of course, all three, particularly Patterson and Harismaic, and I know I'm butchering that guy's name, but whatever. He's not here anymore. Had, you know, proven their coaching chops. And I think probably you could say the same for Clay Patterson. As far as replacements go, we're still looking for a D-line coach. The Gophers have hired two assistant coaches, one in-house and one from Western Michigan that might as well be an in-house. And Andy, I'm interested in your take of what you feel, how Minnesota has done in terms of what they've lost and what they've gained.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all were pretty happy with the way that Joe Harismaic and Clay Patterson and Chad Wilt had coached up their various units. And so, it's a little disappointing to see them go, but obviously, for the most part, you can even argue that Patterson is all leaving for higher promoted jobs. So, I mean, nobody's moving laterally. They're getting promoted. I mean, you'd think last year the Minnesota defense now had three Big Ten defensive coordinators on staff. That's pretty damn impressive. Yeah, so they promoted Danny Collins. Danny Collins had been a defensive analyst and had done some interim coaching during some of the bowl and coach transitions. He apparently is a huge favorite of the players. I mean, they announced officially that he got the job, and in the Gopher Instagram page, I saw Kamal Martin was thrilled. I saw Coney Durr was thrilled. So the players really, really like him. So I think from a coaching standpoint, they're going to be in a pretty good shape there. It's going to be the recruiting, you know, replacing Harismaic, who arguably was one of, if not the best recruiting coaches on this staff. And so whether he can step into that role that he's never performed before and sort of, you know, live up to that expectation will be something we'll have to watch. Tight ends coach, they replaced Patterson with Greg Harbaugh Jr. Actually, I think it's Harbaugh, not Harbaugh. That should tell you that he is, in fact, not related to the famous Harbaugh family, Greg Harbaugh. But he's been at Minnesota a couple of times. He was a grad assistant with the Gophers, and then he was a offensive quality control coach, and he's bounced back and forth with them. PJ Flex knows him, and he was most recently, the last 2 years, the wide receivers coach at Western Michigan, which he did a fairly good job because Western Michigan got a wide receiver to the NFL in the second round last year, and they're going to have another guy probably drafted in the top two or three rounds this year. So the guy definitely seems like he can coach. Again, once again, it will be the question of can he recruit, which, to be honest, we probably won't be able to tell for a cycle or so here. It's also, you know, something to look at that that PJ Fleck probably didn't break the bank on either one of those hires, meaning there's a potential that he might be able to go poach a more expensive D-line coach here and bring somebody in with maybe a little bit bigger name or for, you know, a Power 5 coach moving over to a different Power 5 school. We'll just have to wait and see. We haven't heard anything on that, but it'll be interesting to see who we end up hiring for that position, especially because they're taking a defensive line that obviously has gone through some significant transitions. We've got a lot of young talent. Whoever is coaching just has to really get in there and mold them and try and make them a quality Big Ten unit.
You know, Street, I'd have to say if I was to peg your stance on position coaches moving on, it's shrug. Position coaches are replaceable.
Correct.
Is there anything about this situation that has you concerned, or are you mostly in, it'll work itself out?
Who's the offensive coordinator now?
It's Kirk Shiroka.
Who's the defensive coordinator?
I believe it's still Joe Rossi.
Who's the head coach?
PJ Fleck, the last time I checked.
Yeah, I don't care.
So no worries then, is what I'm hearing.
Look, certainly there are, the reason you have position coaches is not because you can't replace one position coach with another position coach in terms of coaching. Obviously, yes, some people are better at coaching positions than others. Everyone has talent. Predominantly at the college level, position coaches are recruiters. So to some sense, could you be concerned in the sense that you have lost good recruiters? Sure. Do I think that that is probably wildly overrated? Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think especially with the fact that coaches are moving frequently and especially moving to get promoted is also suggesting from a pipeline perspective that PJ Fleck is a coach and an organization where you can come in, be successful, and take that next step. And the only way you can take that next step is if you do good things in the organization so people would like you. Thus far, he seems to be consistently hitting on that a lot more than he's missing. I will trust the head of the organization to identify and find new solid talent, and I will not care very much otherwise.
I think my stance is pretty similar to yours. Until proven otherwise, his only real misses seem to be in the coordinator realm. Not with the position coaches, and since we're talking about position coaches, I good. I have one word for you. Stickers. You need stickers from Home Field Apparel. I have recently purchased basically their entire supply, or at least their entire line of stickers. There's a fantastic Tulane Green Wave. They now have a Slippery Rock University Rocky the Rock in some sort of fur coat with a pennant. Go to homefieldapparel.com to check it out. You're going to love these stickers. And of course, there's all the comfortable, fantastic apparel. I also gave some of that for Christmas to my family. And if you want to ring in the new year with some comfortable sweatshirts, homefieldapparel.com is the place to go. Make sure to use code DAILYGOPHER at checkout for 15% off your first order. That's homefieldapparel.com, code DAILYGOPHER. All right, schedules. The Big Ten, I'll be honest, I'm not entirely sure how this balanced anything out. I don't really care. All I know is it affected Minnesota because Minnesota plays in the Big Ten, and the schedule now looks different than it used to. Obviously, non-conference first three games of the year remain entirely the same because those are not Big Ten games. Beyond that, though, a lot changed. The only two games that remained the same were the home game against Northwestern in the middle of November, November 12th, and the away game to end the year, the Saturday after Thanksgiving at Wisconsin. Everything else got jumbled up. To me, it feels like the most impactful things are Iowa now moving to the second to last game, November 19th. Nebraska also moves back. They were at the end of October, now they're at the beginning of November. And what you end up with is a final four-game stretch of just Big Ten West games, most importantly, the last three of the last four being the quadrangle of hate. You know, Street, do you have any real, what does this do to you, seeing the schedule, other than maybe you have to have a bye on a different week?
I've gotten very excited to hear Andy give his detailed thoughts on the schedule because I don't have strong ones. Other than, yes, I think it is preferable to have a bye later in the season rather than earlier in the season, especially because that end of the season, any kind of injury, you don't have that extra week to get guys healed up and ready to go. Football is a vicious, violent game that will almost certainly not exist in 60 years in its current form. So having an extra week, it tends to be useful when every time your players run into each other, it's the force of a car crash.
Andy, hit me with your thoughts.
No, I mean, looking at the schedule, I mean, obviously, basically, this all changed because during the 2020 COVID season, a few matchups got mixed up because they only played an eight-game season. And so the Big Ten basically had to change a few things. I think one of them basically being so that Penn State and Illinois didn't play 3 years in a row or something like that. And so switching the six games around that they needed to switch ended up basically meaning that almost the entire conference had their schedules thrown out because once you move this game, then you have to move that game and blah, 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 blah. So long story short, yeah, Minnesota, of their nine conference games, seven got moved at some point around. The biggest difference, as you said, now the bye is after week six instead of after week nine where it originally was. So you've got 7 weeks in a row after the bye with no breaks, and now with the quadrangle of hate games all being at the end of November, there's no escaping that. The other thing, Minnesota generally has come out of their bye playing one of their best games of the year. Originally, they were going to head to Michigan State the week after the bye. Now they head to Illinois the week after the bye, which you could argue and say, well, hopefully they should be able to beat Illinois without having to do bye prep work, but we all saw how well that worked out this fall. So, yeah, moving Iowa from week four to week 11 is a big change. You know, in some ways you would have liked to gotten the Hawkeyes early, but now you're going to get them basically within the same week or two that we've had them for the last few seasons. And so having Iowa and Wisconsin back-to-back probably, you know, let's be honest, probably those two games will have a large determining factor on who will win the West again this fall. So other than that, it's just a bunch of days mixed up. You know, now you go right from your first three non-conference games headed out for your first Big Ten game is at Michigan State. Michigan State, in theory, is probably going to be ranked in the top 10 to start the year. I think we get them the week after they play Washington, which will be something we'll have to see. But the, you know, tweaking of the schedule is a little bit interesting. Our game at Penn State, October 22nd, now might be a bit of a trap game for the Nittany Lions as they play Michigan the week before, and they probably have a whiteout at home against Ohio State the week after. So James Franklin's probably not going to be thinking too much about Minnesota and the Gophers. As somebody joked on Twitter, I think it was our good friend Mr. Ben Dawson, the fact that the Nebraska game got moved back a few weeks potentially increases the chance that we get an interim coach of the Cornhuskers, not necessarily Scott Frost, in that game. But you still have your same crossovers. We're going to see Rutgers at home, so we're going to see Curtis Dunlap and Joe Harris-Simiak coming back to Huntington Bank Stadium. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things shake out. But all in all, no new teams, just new dates. And so we still got to play the same people we were going to play yesterday.
Perhaps even better with Nebraska move back. It can be the third straight coach who can get fired because of losing to Minnesota.
Now that is a streak I am excited to see continue.
Let's just put them all on a rail. You play Minnesota late in the season in that fourth or fifth year, and we wave goodbye to you. Goodbye to you, sir. Okay. Yeah, I think for me it mostly just means I don't have to come up with some weird plan to how am I watching Colorado and Iowa in back-to-back weeks at Minnesota when I live in Cincinnati. It absolves me of some of that confusion and complication, which I'm okay with, I think. Oh, wow. Okay, so hockey. We're just getting to hockey. Hockey, you know, we talked a lot last week about the Olympics. We still don't know the full impact of what the Olympic roster will do to Minnesota. We find that out, what, tomorrow?
Yeah, Thursday afternoon, 4 o'clock. ESPN2 will be officially announced. We assume. Well, I guess if you read The Athletic tonight, The Athletic confirmed that 2 more Michigan players are going. They also confirmed, or I guess they confirmed earlier in the week, although somehow it avoided all my attention, that Gopher defenseman Brock Faber has also officially confirmed that he's going. So we know he's going for sure. Other 2 Minnesota players who have been talked about, and I think there's a good chance we'll hear their names tomorrow, Ben Myers and Matthew Knees. I think there's a good chance that 3 Minnesota Gophers will be on the U.S. Olympic team. Actually, 4 with ties to Minnesota, as at least on the original list was also Aaron Ness, Gopher alum who's playing in the AHL right now. So, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of Minnesota flair on this Olympic team over in Beijing.
Well, that, of course, will have an impact on the Gophers. We'll know for sure exactly how big that impact is when the roster gets announced. In the meantime, we do know a very large piece of the Gophers is no longer playing in maroon and gold. Laffer, wave goodbye. Fucking Carolina Hurricanes and their absolute decimation of their goalie spot. That's not good. I'm not mad at the man. I mean, there's money to be made, but ugh, that's not great for the Gophers.
No, unfortunately, that's, there have been 2 major college hockey players that have left in the last 12 years early, and both of them have been Gophers. Of course, the Kyle Oposo situation with the Islanders back in, 2009 or something like that. But, yeah, Jack LaFontaine, basically won his first 2 games in 2022, Friday and Saturday, and Sunday signed a professional deal. So he's with the Carolina Hurricanes, and there's a decent chance that he may actually play in net for the Hurricanes Thursday night. We'll have to see how that works out. So good for him. He got a signing bonus. He's got a chance to be on the actual NHL roster, which is something he definitely would not have been guaranteed had he waited till after the season. So he had to do what was right for him, and you can't really fault him for that. But yeah, at least leaves Minnesota in a world of hurt. Your new starting goalie, who we'll see Friday night, is Justin Close, who's a junior. He's from Kinderley, Saskatchewan. He's played in 6 games in his career, all in mop-up duty. He's never started an actual collegiate game that counted. He played both exhibition games 2 weeks ago and got the wins over St. Thomas and the U.S. under 18 team. So, I mean, we know he can play a little bit, but it's going to be a shock when he gets to play in a game Friday night and it counts for real. What's going to be really interesting is what are we doing behind Close? So Brennan Boynton, who was the freshman they brought in, he played with Fargo, the USHL last year. Everybody thought he was going to be the backup for sure. Well, he missed most of the first part of the season with COVID. He had COVID, and then he had another injury issue that kept him out. Well, now apparently, he's sort of been... It's one of those things that you never get the full story, but for whatever reason, there seems to be some type of communication issue between Bob Motzko and him, and Boynton does not really necessarily look like he's going to be looking to get any time. In fact, I think we'll get a clearer view if he doesn't play in one of the 2 games this weekend against Alaska at home. You wonder if Boynton's going to be on the team next year, which is going to be really interesting. Add that to the fact that it's not officially announced yet, but it sure looks like Minnesota obviously needing a 3rd goalie. They're going to be going back to the USHL early and bringing in Owen Bartakiewicz, who is their recruit who was potentially going to come in next year. Actually, they'd hoped he might even stay in the USHL until 2023. But it sounds like they're going to be pulling him early, and he's going to be enrolling at the U for the second semester, which starts next week, and he'll be the 3rd goaltender on the roster. The interesting thing, again, about that is you don't necessarily pull somebody in a semester early to sit them on the bench. So what exactly Bob Motzko is going to do with the goalie situation here over the next 7 weeks is going to be rather interesting, and besides having implications for the rest of this season, may have implications on the Gopher net going forward. Whether he trusts some of these guys to be the goalies next year, or whether they have to go hit the transfer portal hard over the summer to try and bring somebody in to compete for a job. So it's a mess to say the least. But at least, they can try and ease into it with a non-conference series. Their final non-conference series against the Alaska Nanooks this weekend was originally supposed to be the first weekend of the year. Got postponed because Alaska had COVID. Oh, by the way, that will be the other thing that Minnesota is dealing with, is not only are they missing two players with injuries, but apparently there's three or four Gophers that currently have COVID right now, according to Motzko in his press conference the other day. So the Gophers may be playing a rather short roster this weekend against Alaska.
Thank God it's only Alaska.
I mean, so yeah, but the thing is in this new college hockey landscape, you could say, thank God it's only Alaska, but a loss or two against Alaska pretty much screws you in the pairwise due to all the comparisons and things like that. So honestly, a loss against Alaska probably hurts more than, say, a loss if you were playing Penn State, to be brutally honest. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting weekend at 3M Arena, seeing who actually can play, seeing who's going to play in net, and then it'll be probably the second to the last home series next week against Michigan being the last one that we'll see Ben Myers and Brock Faber and Matthew Nyes on the ice, at least till the final week of the regular season.
All right, for the women, I'm going to recap last weekend. They played St. Thomas. They swept St. Thomas. Wasn't close. This weekend, they have another one of those split series with Minnesota State Mankato. I would assume we're anticipating a sweep of as well, because what is it, like 59 straight wins against Minnesota State?
I'll have to find the exact number when I write the preview, but it is legitimately something like that. I think it's only like 53. But, yes, Minnesota has not lost to Minnesota State since, I think, 2009.
Okay, so we should ideally be
happen this weekend.
Yeah, so we should ideally be seeing another sweep, which then sets up Wisconsin coming to Minneapolis on the 21st and 22nd. So when it comes to the women, that's what we're keeping our eye on. Hopefully the women do a better job of keeping their attention on the Mavericks. But until then, we'll mark them down in our heads for a sweep, because they damn well better. Wow. We've had a lot. I didn't expect this much football, but we're not done either, because if I'm not mistaken, the gymnastics team is number 9 in the nation.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the winter sports season. You know, normally we're transitioning away from football. Football has kept us busy this week. But yeah, the winter sports season is picking up and going full bore. You still have all the teams that have been playing, for the last 2-3 months in the volleyball or in the basketballs and the hockeys. But yeah, women's gymnastics, number 9 in the nation. They open up their season Monday, a Martin Luther King Day matinee, hosting number 8 UCLA. So that should be a fun one at the Pav. So go out and check that out if you're free and need something to do on MLK Day. But, the Gophers, they're predicted to finish second in the Big Ten this year. Michigan, the reigning national champions, and are ranked number 1 to start the year as well. So hopefully the Gophers can show off. And they've got in Ona Loper and Lexi Ramler, two legitimate fifth-year senior who have NCAA championship aspirations. Both of them finished in the top 3, top 4 both all around in individual events at the NCAA championships last year, and they definitely have a good shot to do it this year. So this team, women's gymnastics, obviously I know it's probably not that entertaining to many of our listeners, but they've got a good one, and they've got a couple of athletes that are some of the best in the nation. So definitely try and give them attention here over the next couple of months.
Yeah, but some of the best in Gopher history, which, in the gymnastics program, is not a small thing to say. So, all right, friends, it is that time to call an end to the SkyU podcast. In case you haven't noticed, COVID's a thing. It's still getting worse. Get your damn shots if you haven't yet. And if you have, wear your masks so that, we can keep going to football games without dying and stuff in the fall. Salty about it. Let's not screw it up. But until then, look for all that great content on the blog. And in the meantime, go Gophers. Sky you ma. Row the boat.